Hey guys, welcome to Democracy Unplugged, the AI reality check. Hi, I'm Timothy Maurice, your behavioral psychology author, and I'm going to be facilitating the conversation that's personal. It's about you. What should business be doing to position itself in this era of AI? Is there a bubble coming? Are we going to be extinct? Is South Africa ready for AI? How can we increase our digital intelligence to survive this AI revolution? Will AI wipe out your career? To have this conversation, I am joined by three extraordinary human beings. I'm going to start on my left. I have AI Integrations Manager at Discovery, George Nickus. George, welcome. How are you?
Good, and you? Thank you. Thank you.
Good, good, good. We also have best-selling author of What I Know Now, AI and Tech Thought Leader, Callan Abrams. Welcome. How are you?
Thank you for having me.
Lovely. And my homeboy, an extraordinary human, AI futurist, future of leadership thinker, and best-selling author of The Adaptability Code and other books as well, Mushambe Mutuma. Welcome. How are you?
I'm good, my brother. Thanks for having me.
Guys, thank you so much. Let's give your AI opening statement. Who wants to go first? Put your statement out to the world. What is AI meaning to you in your career at the moment?
All right. Let's start with you.
Well, I think for me and for my career, AI is an incredible multiplier and enabler. I think that in the work that I do, whether speaking or writing or advising, you know, various leaders, it's showing them not really the power of the technology, but the power of the mindset that you need to adopt the technology and really use it to its greatest advantage. And for me, the tool is amazing. The potential is amazing. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about that throughout our conversation. But what I spend a lot of time on first is getting people ready for being ready for change, essentially. How do they adopt to that? How do they embrace it before we go through the rapid disruption and change that's coming?
I mean, you've got an extraordinary history with technology. I mean, you used to work with Apple and the Steve Jobs actual era. Do you feel like you were born for this work?
So I'll correct that. So I didn't work for Apple. My dad did.
Oh, you worked? Your dad
did. I met Steve when I was quite young, about 12, 13 years old.
Okay.
But I think I grew up at Apple at
okay.
that time. So, I mean, my dad started working at Apple in 92. And that was right when Steve was coming back after his kind of his exits. And it was really a time when Apple was shifting into kind of the brand that we know and love today. So I certainly do think
Got it.
I was born in.
You were born there.
And I love it, man.
Well, thank you. I'm looking forward to your insights today. Callan, what's your opening AI statement?
I'm excited for what AI means for South Africa and Africa in general. I think the AI revolution is coming at a time where we're also having a shift in political dynamics globally. And for me, you know, doing business in Saudi, doing business in Switzerland, doing business in Egypt, across the continent as well, many SOEs that I would have thought were unlikely candidates for AI are actually the first to come and say, listen, we want change. We don't want our organizations to be mismanaged in the way that they have been. We see the opportunity that AI is bringing. We see the impact that it can bring. We need you to help us clarify and help us understand how we're going to use this tool to bring change. And for me, that excitement is palpable in every call that I'm in. It gets exhausting because every day I say I listen to problems. I listen to problems and I figure out with my team, how do we turn them into opportunity? And that is an incredibly exciting space to be. And for me, what it's meant in terms of my career and supporting leaders in this very unpredictable time, get quiet and listen. Listen to your customers. Listen to your market. Listen to yourself, because the answers are there. It's about how do we facilitate it, bring it out. And I love what you said about creating the space for that, because the technology does not exist in a silo. Funny enough, I also, last thing, I really want to mention that what excites me about this technology is that it promotes something that we haven't really considered before. What if we let go of our individual identities? What if we think about community first? What if we think about what we can do when we pull our resources together? And funny enough, that kind of thinking is natural to Africans. It comes natural to how we think. And what we had before was actually a little bit unnatural to us, and we had to kind of work against our natural programming. So I'm very excited what AI and our natural African values will bring to the conversation as well.
I love it. George, you come from a very different environment than these guys. They're out there traveling the world. You are over here at Discovery, doing AI integration, helping Discovery navigate this. And I wanted you on this panel specifically because we want the business lens on it. Give us your opening statement.
Definitely. Yeah. So I'm that corporate donkey.
Yeah.
That sits behind the desk and, you know, tops away the whole day. But I think there is just an immense amount of opportunity. And no matter, no, it just intersects absolutely every single industry. I specifically work in the insurance arm, the PNC insurance arm of Discovery. And I think most people will think, flip, that's freaking boring. But this technology is absolutely incredible. I'm so excited for the amount of opportunity that it gives. Similar to kind of what you said, and the democratization that this technology kind of brings forward, anybody can use it. Any corner of the globe. And it's just getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and easier and easier and easier to use. I'm so unbelievably excited for that. I can open up my laptop, connect to a, you know, an LLM, ChatGPT or whatever, a free version, and you have access to this level of technology. It's the opportunity is unbelievable. Previously, you know, we've gone through some revolutions, the dot-com boom, you know, iPhones being invented, or, you know, all of those kinds of revolutions. I think this is an exponential shift. And the opportunity that this unlocks is absolutely exponential moving forward. And I'm really, really optimistic about the future. And I'm excited about the opportunities moving forward. Yeah.
Thank you. I want us to ground this conversation. Mm-hmm. I want us to think about the fears of people in the audience. I want us to, people who are at home watching this or commuting or on the treadmill, wherever they're listening. How do we accelerate? Because if there's anyone like me, sometimes I feel like I'm behind. You start speaking about LA, you know, all this sort of stuff. I have no idea of stuff. How do I accelerate my understanding and my growth? Let's come back to you, Mashan. What would you say to somebody right now? How do I get up to speed on what's going on? There's so many platforms. There's so much stuff going on in AI.
Yeah, man, that's a great question. I get asked it often. Which one should I use? So, hey, pick one. Just pick one and start playing with it. Start experimenting. Start having fun with it. Start asking it questions. Start asking it to optimize different parts of your day. Ask it not to solve a problem or write an email or proposal for you, but ask it, help me think about this differently. I'm writing this and help me. What am I missing? What haven't I considered?
Let's talk about a specific case.
Yeah.
So Netta in the audience, yeah. She runs an extraordinary organization helping people, you know, feel, look better, and heal, right? How could she start using it tomorrow to accelerate her growth at her organization?
I mean, if I was her, I'd probably plug into the platform. I'm saying look better, and maybe that's in the fashion sense or in the aesthetic sense. I'd maybe plug in some information about the different customers that I have or what the problems they're going through or the interests that they have. And I ask that platform to help me think about that differently and to output maybe.
Just like that. Help me think about it.
Just literally help me think about this problem I'm trying to solve differently.
Okay.
Right? That's the most basic use case for AI is again, and I think there's a lot of risk in getting lazy with AI and just saying, solve everything for me. And that's why I say, take a problem to it, take a solution to it, and say, what am I missing?
I've got you.
And I think you'll be blessed with the outcome.
I love it. Ken, I've got a friend in the audience that is starting a property business.
Yeah.
Take him through what he could do to accelerate his journey in the property business.
So number one, the first way to prompt any LLM properly is to stop thinking about it as technology. Think about it just the same way you would take a human being through context and explain, hey, I've got this, 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 and these are my customers, and this is where my problem is. The exact same way you would speak to a human and give them that level of context, give that to the LLM, number one, right? Or to any AI solution. And I think...
Just like bigger, I'm talking to... Should we just give...
Have a conversation.
Maybe instead of calling it ChatGPT, call it Craig.
What I like to think about it as... Definitely, you can name it. What I like to think about it as, instead of a technology per se, I'd like to think about it that the technology powers our collective intelligence. Because if we think about it, what the technology has allowed is for us to gather the data on what we know until now. and that is, as a society, what we know. Doesn't mean that, okay, that's another question.
Let's talk about the property situation.
But the property situation is, so that is the collective intelligence. And now different technology platforms have different versions of our collective intelligence. So Google has their version, OpenAI has their version, AWS has their version, IBM has their version. Pick one. Personally, for the property manager, I would suggest the Google, because Google is specifically really tailor-made, doing some really wonderful work with NGOs and also small businesses. That's really where they're targeting their market. You know, if you're looking at your IBMs, they're really driving for legacy organizations. If you're looking for your AWSs, they're looking for your very innovative, hardcore dev environments. So the different platforms have their own lanes as well. But for the property space, I would definitely suggest Google AI Studio. And then for the young people in the audience who would like to use the AI correctly and not to write the essays, I would say go find a tool called Learn Your Way by Google, where you can actually throw in your textbook and it will explain.
What do you mean throw in your textbook?
You upload your textbook or notes or whatever you're learning.
Pages, yeah.
And it will explain Pythagoras to you in basketball, if that's what you like.
Got it.
And so that is one of my favorite use cases, personalized learning.
Okay.
So talking about that, ask your favorite LLM how to start as well. That's also an option. So I completely agree. Pick one. But if you're in the small business space specifically, I would heavily suggest Google.
Sure. George, I've got another friend. You know, I've got friends in the audience. I've got lots of friends. I got a whole lot of friends. And I've got one in the audience, David. He has a fairly large business. He does really well. When you start looking at AI integration inside of a business, let's talk about how you start thinking about integrating the work you actually do for a business. You know, not a small business, not an individual, but what are some of the thinkings that a leader needs to start integrating?
I think simply put, and this is gonna be a bit brash, but move fast, break things. I think that's really where it's at. In a time like this, I know that's a divisive thing to say. I think many companies are very risk averse with this technology.
Mm.
It's very easy to get stuck in this loop of test, pilot, governance, test, pilot, governance. McKinsey did this study. They did a survey on companies. They found there's this thing called Gen AI paradox. There are lots of things. There are lots of reasons as to why it happens. But the one finding was that they found out that 80% of companies have, you know, incorporated some form of AI, Gen AI, somewhere in the company. But only 20% of them have actually realized any sort of earnings, you know, from it, any sort of ROI from it. What does this mean? What, you know, one of the reasons is because a lot of companies are stuck in this loop of just test, be very cautious, be very cautious. I completely understand it. Working in the insurance industry, I understand it more than anyone else. Sure. It's, you know, it's regulation galore. But I think what's very important and what I would say is do the pilots, do the tests. It's important, but limit them. 1 month, 2 months, that's it. Then figure out how to implement, how to get them, how to ship them as quickly as possible, as soon as possible, straight after that. Find the ROI, get priority for it and get it shipped. first use case you implement from there, it'll be difficult to get there. You'll do the compliance checks, the security checks, et cetera, et cetera. But from there, the next use case will be a little bit easier and a little bit easier. And from there, the dominoes will fall. I'd say that would be one thing.
I was watching Elon in Saudi. Here in the CEO of the video, whatever it is. He said that working in the future will be an option. Like most jobs will be kind of wiped out. That working is an option. Like, you know, how do you guys feel about that? When I read it, I had like a visceral response.
Sounds great.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, what are your thoughts about?
Well, it's funny you say this. I have the theory that AI will force us to become more human. My theory is that how we've been living at the moment is not very human. This 9-to-5 everyday rat race situation where we don't have time to actually sit and meet with our friends and be together and do things together. If you look, even from a business sense, it's not all just kumbaya, but I mean, even from a business sense, you think about how many businesses and how many organizations are actually incredibly detached from what they're actually trying to drive in the market, who their customers are, and what they're trying to achieve. And if you take away all the operational stuff from an organization, what's left? That is now what is going to determine the future. That is going to determine which businesses last and actually add value to society and which don't. And potentially that's a good thing. And it's funny you say that. It means that, remember with technology, every level of technology disrupts even more. So they connect it, right? I'm looking at it, Matt. They connect it. They correlate it. So the more disruption you have, the more technology you have, the more disruption you have. So now we are at the level of exponential technology, exponential disruption, which means that previously, if you think of just what's happened with the apps and the internet boom, we have that banking was disrupted, transportation was disrupted. Now we're going to look at society as we know it will be disrupted, as in the way that we educate our children, different. The way that we work, different. The way that we govern, different. The way that we do business, different. The way that we socialize, different. Okay. Everything, different.
Yeah. I think maybe just to give another take to kind of where we are in terms of jobs being disrupted. I certainly think that some jobs will be disrupted. I think a lot of job functions will be disrupted. I think that's what's more at risk right now, today, the job functions, some of those admin tasks, some of those mundane things. Those are the things that's at threat now. But at the same time, I saw a post literally before I left home to come here, and it was an AI plagiarism detector. And it said that the Declaration of Independence in the United States was 96% AI. I was like, the document has existed since 1776, but this plagiarism detector couldn't detect that one of the most famous documents in the world was not AI. And so I say that to say is that we're still a long ways away. There's certain things that are evolving and certain capacities and functions are moving at light speed, but I don't think that our threats to all of our jobs and our being as humans is really at immediate risk. I think we're going to be okay.
Have you gotten rid of any people on your team? I have.
Yeah.
So let me be clear.
So you asked that for me or for you?
I'm trying to feel better about myself.
Gee.
I had a creative associate. I've just completely, they're not necessary anymore. I can churn out logos. I can churn out creative tasks. Literally like that.
Yeah.
I was working with a client the other day and we were trying to create something for his legacy, his personal brand legacy. And he was shocked. I was shocked at how quickly we came up with this. And so I'm just curious, like, and I want to know specifically, have you gotten rid of anyone?
So I've had multiple firms, what can I say? I've had multiple funnels of running business, from a startup that grew up to 40, 60 people, to the corporate environment where I ran a team of 500, to now where I've got a team of two. And I will never, ever again hire more than three people. I don't see the point. I don't see the value in that. Like, there, I would never do that again for what I do right now, speaking, writing, advising. I never would do that. Because the capacity, like you said, of the tools that exist right now is so much that I don't need those roles. But on the other side is I recently, earlier this year, was interviewing for a new role. So I did have a content person. I thought I needed that that support. And one of the questions I asked in the interview was, how are you using, or what prompt would you use to solve this problem for me? Because I knew if I ask you, what kind of strategy would you come up with my brand? They were just going to go put that in ChatGPT and then come and copy and paste. So I said, instead of telling me what you're going to do, actually tell me how you think. Teach me how you think about how you prompt and play with these tools. And so I think it's a shift of hiring only people that can have value because they can play with the tools and use the tools at scale. If they can't, then they certainly get replaced.
So, Kellen, I want to come back to you for a second, because recently I did exactly that. I had a client who is under extraordinary risk with their brand reinvention. And I downloaded everything off ChatGPT and various other platforms. And I said, this is what technology is saying, but it's not going to solve your problem because it doesn't have the human insight part of what I think. And they were shocked because what I shared with them was mind blowing. What I downloaded off of AI, I was completely blown away. So tell us about the integration between human intelligence and artificial intelligence.
I want to start in a weird way. Taste. All right. If you think about the time when TVs first came on, right? And I wasn't there. the shows that were on, right, were probably not the production was probably terrible. The camera quality was, black and white. The acting was probably horrific, right? But as taste developed, now we have different genres. Now we have the Oscars. We have all of these different things. Very similarly, people eventually are going to get tired of AI-generated content. And what happens when people get tired and we start saying, "Ooh, yuck, I want premium. I want a human-made logo." I don't know if anyone has seen what Rosalia has done with her album. Absolutely beautiful and inspiring. And that is a direct correlation. It's something I'm calling AI economics. Because as much as, yes, the demand increases for AI-generated content, at some point it's going to hit a maximum point. And as much as, yes, the supply of it hits a max point, the market must always find equilibrium. And so that is where we're going to see, at some point, labor will be cheaper than the AI.
Got it.
Potentially. Mm-hmm.
George, let's go back into our teams. How would you say we should actually think about putting teams together? Like you said at Discovery, on your particular team, you've got six or seven people.
Yeah.
What are the tackle skills are on this team?
So I think it's interesting. I mean, I feel like I've been prepared for this kind of question for the last year now, because, you know, I get people coming to my desk pretty often saying, you know, with bright ideas, saying, I want to do this, I want to do that. Obviously, a part of that, they're scared that they're going to be replaced and all of that kind of stuff. And they want to upskill themselves. George, what Coursera thing can I do? And when I tell them, I can point you somewhere, but it's going to be outdated in a week. there's no university degree that can prepare you for this. I think that's, you've got to kind of change your thinking and think of that as pretty exciting rather than, you know, making you super nervous, right? So I think that's super critical. That line of thinking is what I would look to hire in my team.
So you're looking for mindset.
100% mindset.
Proficiency
on a, AI is not going to replace people. People using AI are going to replace people. I think that's like super important. A lot of people come up to me and you know, they ask and they're concerned about this kind of stuff. And it really is, AI does an unbelievably good job with shifting time allocation. You're doing the mundane, you're no longer doing the mundane, frees up the human's time to think more strategically, to have that one-on-one conversation with an employee. You know, those kind of HR level discussions, strategic thinking, that type of stuff. That's what's super critical in a resource.
God, how can we make money from AI? People are making a killing. Literally, people are starting AI businesses. They're going online, creating random stuff and making a whole lot of money. Are you guys making money using AI? Tell us how you make it, because you guys look rich. Tell us.
You first. You look richer than me.
I just came back from Switzerland.
I have a tux on my photo. Oliga.
If somebody in the audience wants to make money using AI, create alternative sources of income.
I would say, and it comes back to what you were saying, it really all boils down to think or not to think. That's the question. The work that we're looking at, the work that we're talking about there, it's thinking work. And when you say work is optional, you decide whether you want to use your brain or not.
Mm-hmm.
This is the democracy that we're moving towards. If you want to think, what does that require you to do? Think holistically. Requires you to get out of the existing space and what you know to be the world. Come out of it and actually look at it objectively. What if? If that, could this, maybe this, that's how you make money. And it requires you to get quiet first. I always say this, get quiet. What problems do you have in your life?
Okay,
solve from
there. I get that. So what I think I'm also interested in, and this is good stuff, but for those who aren't entrepreneurially inclined, where are some of the areas and the boxes where we can start making money?
So I think, I'll give you an example. So I get in trouble quite often when I'm speaking, because every time I speak lately, I do a short demo. I say, excuse me, guys. I point to the CEO. I'm sorry. I'm about to announce this. You told me not to, but I'm about to. And I put up on the screen an amazing new technology with the client's logo right there, and just say, the guys are just about to announce this. As soon as you guys leave this keynote in this hall, you're all going to get a link and download this. And the CEO like starts sweating. He's like, what's this guy doing and announcing? And it's typically something I built for free on Lovable or Replit or any other vibe coding platform. And essentially what that is whatever idea I have, build an app for four panelists or multiple entrepreneurs, speakers, whatever. And I put an idea onto the screen and it literally codes this application within 5 minutes. And I say that to say is that if I can do that really quickly on stage and showcase whatever client I'm speaking at, something innovative for their audience and for their team, imagine what you could do, right? For free. Like those platforms are available for free. So building tech right now it happens in minutes. Like my first business, we had 40 people. We had a team of designers, a team of devs. I need none of those people anymore to launch any idea I'm thinking of. And you can hit publish on any of those applications and be live on the App Store in 20 minutes. So for me, with the opportunity of AI from a building sense and making money sense, is that any idea that you think of, it's the cheapest, fastest, easiest time to build right now than it ever has been in human history. And so that's an amazing opportunity. It's like, just build anything and you can make some money.
Can I please caveat that? Do it authentically.
For sure.
Because if you are now, you know, suddenly going to do something completely out of your wheelhouse, people are not really going to buy into it. And if everybody can build a POC in 5 minutes, it needs to be authentic to who you are and what you believe. Because in the future, what's going to drive business, and this is why I say we're going to do business differently, is not how wonderful your technology is. It is how well have you actually thought about this problem? How intensive is your solution? Do you have results? Do you have a brand behind you? Do you have people who are willing to support you? That is actually what's going to be the basis of business.
George, how do we protect our democracy? Let's bring it to South Africa. Let's have some tough conversation real quick about South Africa. How do we protect our democracy against the threat of AI misinformation and disinformation?
It's a rough question.
That's why you make the big bucks.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's definitely a tricky question. The technology at the moment definitely does kind of, you know, open up a lot of risk. We're all worried about it in many different aspects. Fake news, things out there, you know, everything being kind of, you know, generated on the fly, all of that kind of stuff. I mean, it is a massive concern. When you mean democracy, what do you want to just expand on that?
Yeah. So protecting the kind of civilization, the democracy, the health and the vibrancy of the democracy. Like what the key component, the key drivers of democracy, like how do we protect against the threat of misinformation? Misinformation can thwart a democracy, right?
Yeah, I mean, you were talking about authenticity earlier. You know, misinformation is out there. It's, to a large extent, been there for a while. Now, you know, it gets generated on the fly by something you are not even really in control of anymore.
Yeah. Like and so forth.
Yeah. Yes. No, 100%. Being able to understand how the technology works is super important. You know, figuring out exactly how it works, being, you know, part of it. You were talking about it a little bit earlier. Not being, you know, scared of it, kind of adopting it as you go, understanding it, not being afraid of it, and almost shunning it is very important. And I think that
do you want to speak?
Yeah, must I?
Go for it.
So I think there's two aspects. So for the political leaders, the leaders of actual countries and democracies, what I'd like to see is that there's a sense of ownership of what this means. And I will often say that sometimes the leaders don't realize that they actually have power. And you almost want to shake them and say, do something, anything. And from that, it's really about realizing that from their perspective, they have the power to set, hey, listen, we all agree on this base level. Instead of focusing on what divides us, how about we first set the foundation as, we all agree on this, right? And I think the new mayor of New York did a wonderful job of that and is a great example of what the politics of the future should look like. We all agree on this. We might be different in different aspects. We all agree on this base level. And that level of leadership needs to be present in this time. The next thing is that from us, a community perspective, we need to drive at any opportunity education and awareness. So, I mean, these are the pillars of a good, healthy democracy: education and awareness, education and awareness. The reality is that young people can spot a fake AI-generated something very quickly. You don't even need to teach them. The problem is Jen, which one? I'm not even going to mention.
My mother-in-law.
I know you know who we're talking about.
It's definitely my mother-in-law, yeah.
That's the problem. Those are the people we need to help. Those are the people who are at risk, right? So go help your mother-in-law. Make sure she's not clicking on anything she shouldn't be. And again, education and awareness. But these things these are still the same pillars.
Yeah. Should AI platforms operating in South Africa be required to kind of store data here instead of other places?
Yeah, I think maybe more important to me than storing data here is us having our own data centers here and AI superpower data centers located here. Because if we can store that computing capacity locally, then we can build some of these technologies ourselves. I think that's a much more exciting proposition than where the data is. The data is out there. I don't personally care where it's stored, but I'd love that if we were building that capacity. And people like Strive Masiwa are doing that. I know he's doing that in Morocco. He's trying to do things in Cape Town as well to build those AI-powered data centers locally. And I think that's exciting.
What are some surprising ways you guys are using AI? If, you know, right now in your own personal life, some things that you're doing, forget business for a second, just on a personal level, have you booked any trips, like from start to finish, some interesting, quirky things?
Yeah, I tried doing that. Yeah, have you heard of that ChatGPT agent thing that you can do? You can go onto it and it creates a little interactive window in your browser there. It goes and clicks around, and it's pretty rubbish at the moment, if I'm honest. It takes very long, and a human could do it, you know, much quicker. But the implication of it is absolutely unbelievable.
So take us through.
So what it basically does is that I think it's through the paid subscription or something. By the time this podcast bit gets released, there might be another update. Who knows? But essentially, what you can do is you can go tell it book a flight for me, and it goes and creates a little interact.
Like your agent,
yeah,
working for you.
So that's what it is. But it's more involved than that. You know, previously, it did it to a certain extent. You would be able to say, generate a report for me, and it would generate it. This is different. This goes onto the website physically. You can see it. It opens up an interactive window. It's got a little cursor that flies around the screen. Goes and clicks, adds this, let's say you want to, I don't know, you know, book a flight. And it goes, and then it prompts and sends you a message to say, okay, put in your card, you know, detail information now. Oh. So, yeah, I've used it a handful of times just because I was interested. And you can, you know, you can go in and order something off of, you know, Takealot or whatever it is. It puts it in the cart and it's ready for you. But you can go and trigger all of these different things on various different browser tabs. Go have supper, come back, everything's lined up for you, and go put in your credit card information. So, I mean, I played around with that a little bit. So it's good quality.
What about you guys? Any knowledge, anything?
Mine is very unhinged. So I have ADHD and autism, which is actually what the book is also about. I was very late diagnosed. And now that I think about it, I'd be like, come on, guys. This was a little bit obvious. But there was something wonky here. But especially the ADHD, I think, and actually the autism. So I very often will get overwhelmed by certain things. And, you know, just the day-to-day admin. I'm allergic to admin.
Okay.
And very often, you know, I don't always have a human being to say, okay, it's going to be okay. You're just going to move this meeting. Because when you're in that ADHD space, it's like everything and you can't really focus on one thing. So I kind of just say, okay, I've got this, I've got this, I've got podcast party, I've got this to report to do, I've got this. Help me figure out what to do in the next 24 hours and how to structure this. And then I just follow that.
What are you using to do that?
I like Gemini specifically.
Okay.
So I like Gemini, but I actually play around for different.
Bord
is amazing for code and things like that. And then the AWS platform has some really cool stuff. Bedrock is amazing for enterprise. IBM's got Watson. Listen, don't I use all? For that specifically, I think because it's connected to my personal Google mails and, you know, the agents and things like that, it's a little bit easier. And I mean, Google's really got a lot of my information. So I was like, might as well.
Have you been surprised at how helpful it's been in that moment of anxiety?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I do have a worry, though. I mean, there are obviously cases. I still have a therapist who 100% diagnosed me. So I wasn't using that to get diagnosed. You know what I mean? And that's where I find the worry. Is that, I mean, recently OpenAI had a situation where, you know, it wasn't a nice ending. I do, however, find that actually identifies jobs for the future. People are searching so desperately for connection. If you look at the best AI use cases, that's AI girlfriends and boyfriends. It's AI therapists. It's AI friends. That's a real, you know.
People are lonely.
You know. Call to action on what we actually need to focus on in society, where the jobs are as well, where the opportunities are.
What are some of the fun, cool things you're doing with it?
None of mine are fun, man. They're all admin. No, but I think I've got different I got different agents and different chats for different things. So I've got one for business, one for content. I've got one for family things, like if I need to manage my mother-in-law and any AI videos. But just family thoughts and just but yeah, just thinking of like family challenges, right? Like that come with these gray hairs, right? Now I've got one for my kids. And yeah, so it's
but what kind of thing you're doing with the kids? Take us, I mean,
yeah, so I mean, so the kids. And for my kids, so that's like a monitored one. So I got an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old. Those chats are monitored with those kids, and one speaks to my son, one speaks to my daughter, and it knows kind of their archetype and their interests, and ask different questions, or they're able to kind of play and experiment with it with my supervision, right? And the rest kind of handle different parts of my day. Last week I was working with my chief of staff on a 19-city road show. And I put in, these are all the dates, and these are all the cities, and it came up with an amazing travel plan. And the nuance is, after I went back and forth, it says, and because you like a good night's sleep, you should try traveling like this. And I was like, oh, snap, like this thing actually knows me quite well, that I'd rather travel the day before and get there than the morning of. And so there's a lot of nuance there, but I appreciate that it knows all the different parts of me, from admin to personal to family, and I can speak to it accordingly.
I resonate with that. I booked my entire honeymoon of ChatGPT. It's absolutely great.
Did you really?
Oh, not entire. Okay, I'd help it a bit. I'm so spot anymore.
Blush at me.
Oh, Flip, this is necessarily published there.
The woman in your life was sick.
So before we move to what, there's one or two more serious things, and then we're going to go to the audience. You guys on the ends, you guys are married. You just came from honeymoon. Are you in a relationship? Are you using ChatGPT for? Let's talk to the single people. I mean, there are single people out here who want to know, should you get into a relationship with a robot? Should you swipe faster or slower? You know, what implications does AI have for being single?
I think what I've seen recently, and that's not much because I've mostly seen inside of boardroom, but I've seen in general, the general theme, if you track dynamics, like just what Gen Z is doing, Gen Alpha as well, what they're doing, is that it's always, like I said, going into equilibrium. The more, as our millennials, we were very tech, you know, online dating, da 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 da. You're seeing that decrease. So you're seeing that people want to meet in person. You're seeing applications. There's a wonderful, wonderful application that I'm actually hoping that they come to South Africa. They call Crociety. Trying to convince them to come to Africa. We're more for that kind of application. That, you know, they're really driving social connection. Like, what's happening in the city today? Let's go see. Let's go meet people. Let's not put so much pressure. Let's go learn from others. I'm seeing more value placed on connections outside of just relationship. Outside of just, this is my friend, this is not my friend. This is someone I can learn from. This is someone who knows something that I don't. This is someone that I just had a blast with them. They just had the best jokes. Goodbye. That's okay.
Just connecting.
But this is what I'm trying to say. You don't understand because you're not Gen Z. Even me, I'm trying. But this is where we're working towards, is that we're just appreciating each other for who we are, where we are right now. And whether that develops into a relationship, awesome. But what we're seeing is that the more AI, the less AI we actually want. The more AI we have, the less AI we actually want, especially in those vulnerable private spaces.
Okay, this is my last question about being single. So for that dry period where there's no one in your DMs, you know that period where you guys don't know, you've been out the game for a while. You've been up for it. But you know, there's like nothing happened.
I said I would be honest. Eh?
The likes have dropped on your photo.
See you.
Hey, speak for yourself.
Very. Case of problem.
So, can AI solve for some loneliness?
No.
So I think there's a big risk there. Right. Because I think now more than ever, especially post-COVID, is we're dealing with loneliness as a human condition on absolute steroids.
Okay.
Right. Is that a lot of people have not recovered from that. And a lot of people are just spending time indoors. I always say to my wife, you see somebody on TV or on the internet and you're like, this person needs to just go touch grass. You're like, just get outside. And so I think that I think there's a big risk there. And I think there's a big risk even to disclosing to AI maybe the nuances of some of your health conditions or your psychological conditions.
Okay.
Because these platforms are not built to support you and help you. So, I mean, I think if I think about my AI and all the things that it would know about me and all my family nuance or religion nuance, it's curating its responses based on my personality type and what it knows about me. If I typed in the same things on yours, it would probably be very different because I'd be like, this doesn't sound like Tim at all. And I think we have to be careful about how much of that we hand over to these tools that are not built to support us, but at the end of the day are built by capitalist businesses to scale and grow. They're not support services. It's not like your emotional support robot. That's not what it is, you know?
So one last thing.
Okay.
Because I will answer this question because when it's all about, and it's in the book as well. It's in the book.
Okay.
It's about loving yourself deeply to the point where you know everything about the world and you know everything about how great everyone else is, but you still have a deep appreciation for how wonderful you are. That's where we need the world to get because everything else is a projection. I always say, as if you can point the finger at somebody else, there's always normally something that you might not like about yourself. And so you have to also understand what's at play in terms of the ego. So loving yourself in those moments, incredibly important to make sure that you're not looking for that love in GPT or looking for that love in a person. Because remember, somebody else is not going to fix your inner issues. At the end of the day, you have to sit with yourself and AI doesn't pick that.
Got it.
I love this evangelism. Let's give her a round of applause. So last hard question, and then we're going to go to the audience. So how do you protect South African jobs against foreign outsourcing of AI? Any thoughts on that?
Let's be authentically South African.
Okay.
Build businesses that solve South African problems.
Mm. So if the DNA of what you're solving for is South African, then you kind of solve for
niche businesses. We're going to see, I mean, if we really tap in to say, what does the world, we as South Africans, what does it look like? What do we want? What problems do we want to solve? I wish I knew the name, but maybe you can put it on the tab. There's a business that I saw recently, a small business, wonderful, wonderful. And I'm just trying to promote them. They're amazing. They've made a application where people can pay for their taxi with their phone. And then they use the money that they collect to do investments and things like that. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's absolutely brilliant. That's a South African business. And the money can be used for content creation. We know we own TikTok. You know, there's so much opportunity there.
Thank you.
I think
any last comment on?
Yeah, man. I mean, we were speaking about this just now in the other room. I think from a corporate standpoint, is that how can you invest in your people and give them the best tools for success, right? One thing Discovery does when they're recruiting is they brag to any new quants or new hires that we have NVIDIA chips in the basement. Come and play with them. And so for me, on a South African basis, is like, what if South Africa was saying to its youth, we've got NVIDIA chips, we've got these safe places for you to come and build amazing tech, come play with it. And I think that's an amazing opportunity to kind of shift and put the tech in the hands of our young people. Because if we keep going the way that we are right now, we're gonna crumble. So I think I'd love if South Africa operated like Discovery from a recruitment standpoint of our own people.
Let me just quickly say, it is there. Google, AI, I mean, AWS, IBM, they all have free platforms available. Free, Lovable, Replit. Go look. Start.
Good.
Start.
I think as South Africans, have got a very entrepreneurial spirit. Like, we go out and do stuff, which I think is great. That's what I was kind of saying earlier. We've got an immense amount of opportunity in this country. Rather than looking at the negative,
yeah,
We rather look at the positive. And I think this technology, like we mentioned a little bit earlier, democratizes a lot of that. And organizations like Discovery, they do a lot of that kind of stuff. They look at the silver lining. They look at the opportunity rather than what's wrong. And using this technology as an enabler, I think opens up a world of opportunity.
Did you find your wife on AI?
On AI? No.
All right, guys. So I want to come up to the audience. We're going to come to the audience. I feel like I sounded like my father.
That's what you're in. The Facebook.
On the Facebook. Okay. So how many of you guys have children? Anybody have children? You know, if you're thinking about at what age you start introducing conversations about prompting and so forth, you don't have to ask that question, but I'm just putting some things out there for you guys to think about. Did you want to ask a question?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Can we get the mic here? And then we'll come to you next afterwards.
I've got a couple, but I also want...
We
all see the world through a lens. You know, our worldview, our ideology, whatever.
When someone's asking ChatGPT or AI a question, how do we trust that the ideology is... who informs AI's ideology, worldview? Because, you know, two people can look at the same geopolitical event and have completely different takes on it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the world's so polarized. I mean, who or what is informing AI of its ideology and worldview?
Great question.
And how do you ask true or false?
Yeah. Let's actually take three questions and then we'll come back, okay? So
who and what is forming the ideology and the backbone of the morality by AI? Okay, yes?
So my question is twofold. I don't know if you can question it, answer it in one go. For those of you who know me, I'm Chan Chan Kala. I'm from Alex, right? First time my peers saw AI, I was wearing a shirt which had like AI at the back. And then we were so like, what is this AI? Like, everyone is talking about it. Showed it to them, showed it. I think I showed them Bard. It is still Bard at the moment. And then questions that they asked it was, who killed Tupac?
Really?
And people love arguing the world.
It's a good question, but I mean, I feel like my peers are not ready for it, right? And when AI started, when ChatGPT was introduced, the pictures were horrible. They were horrific. The fingers looked weird. They don't know do. But it's getting better. So what do you say to someone who's a creative? I was trained as a graphic designer or developer, and every day is a nightmare for me, right? My job is being replaced like that. So how do I advise people to go into this field? And how do I advise people who are conditioned to think that success is education, more education, and then work?
Okay, that's a great question.
You understand?
Okay, thank you. One more question.
I'm supposed to remember the great
question. I got it. I got you.
Hi. So there's an episode I watched on Perception. It's a series about Dr. Pearson, who is a psychologist at Harvard, I think. So on that episode, they created a world, a digital world, where they could actually interact. They could be who they really want to, you know, themselves, instead of this reality where they have anxiety, they have all sorts of feelings and all that jazz. Now, at some point, a character on that episode lost touch with the reality. He preferred being in the digital world instead. Now, looking at AI, and thank you for this title, which is called AI Reality Check. What are the chances of somebody losing touch with reality and then being so immersed in technology, social media?
Yeah, the lines are like blurred.
That kind of thing. So, yeah.
Great question. I actually think, let's start with that particular question, because I do think it's a possibility that you kind of alluded to that earlier.
Yeah, AI psychosis is a very...
AI psychosis.
It's a very real situation. And I think it's a... Maybe we start classifying...
digital sicknesses, very similar to social media, how it tended to create depression, especially in young people. I do think that there might be a specific opportunity to study this in detail, but it's really caused at least one death that I know of, and it's really quite sad. So don't use AI alone. But it's the same with any technology. I mean, people used to drink and drive and thought nothing was wrong with that when cars were first invented, I'm sure. But then the regulations come in, people learn that seatbelts are good, then all of the other different aspects. So I think the more we develop the technology, we also learn about the potential risks, and then we learn how to mitigate those risks. I always talk about, I mean, it's the same conversation when we talk about the risks of social of data, and I think it's the first one as well. The risks of data leaks and information being in the wrong hands, or people using information to their own agenda as well. Number of risk governance issues. I always talk about, especially from a leadership perspective, whether you're a business leader or other type of leader, thinking about it as similar to a disaster recovery situation, as in, what if the worst happens? What is my strategy from there? Right. And I think that's where we need to think about it. It's like, if the worst happens and there's an entire, you know, technology platform that owns our country mentally and owns how we think, that is dangerous to our sovereignty. So government needs to step in.
Okay.
To answer maybe both the questions, the last one first, is that I think what needs to happen is something that's happening in the gaming world right now. As I saw recently, I think it was Call of Duty, and a guy had been playing for 16 hours, and a notification came up on the screen and said, dude, go take a shower. but then it said, you've been on this platform nonstop for 16 hours. We're restricting your gaming for X amount of time. You know, go touch grass, go take a shower, and come back. And I think that needs to happen. Also, last week I saw a gentleman sued ChatGPT because ChatGPT told him, or his ChatGPT told him, he was a genius and had come up with some amazing, like Einstein-like formula, and that he needed to save the world and get this out there to everybody. And he's like, yeah, this thing gassed me up so much that my job, and I thought that I was a genius, and he's not. And so I think that there's that nuance of understanding how these things work, understanding that usually they're very agreeable, and they say that you're amazing. And you actually have to prompt it and tell it to say, hey, man, don't agree with me all the time. Tell me where I'm not thinking correctly. Tell me where I'm making mistakes. But again, it's not outsourcing all of your thinking and producing to these tools.
I think it's also relative as well, right? To answer your question specifically, like if I spoke to my grandparents 5-10 years ago, they would have thought that I'm addicted to these devices and on my phone, and it's already, you know, the lines are already blurred. You spoke to someone, you know, at the dot-com boom that was, you know, sitting on the computer, Bill Gates, you know, putting Microsoft together, you would say, what the heck, you know, lines are blurred there. It's easy to take a checkpoint right now and say, that's it, lines are blurred. I think it's, you know, more than ever. I don't know if anybody's seen The Social Network that's on Netflix, that documentary around social media and whatever. And just going back to what some of the other panelists have said, just around actually mitigating the issues. I mean, on that documentary, they spoke about, you know, dulling things down a bit more on social media. You don't need that, you know, red notification that pops up, you know. And I think there's quite a big movement now, actually. I don't know if anybody's seen it, around people buying dumb phones now. And they're actually literally going and saying, I actually want to unplug a bit. Which is quite interesting. And I think AI, there's also an opportunity there. We're no longer actually swiping through applications as much anymore. We're now talking more. And we're conversing, and we're using the ChatGPT voice mode, and we're thinking and we're talking a little bit more, which are all human traits. So if we think of it like from that point of view, as long as we're kind of pursuing it to be more human, I think that's the best form of mitigation.
So, yeah, I want to come to your question about, I want, Mashami, if you can talk to CMOs have been wiped out, creatives like this young man has been wiped out. How do you talk to the soul and the heartbeat of a creative?
Yeah, man, I think the roles are certainly shifting and moving, but we still need creatives. Right. If I put in on ChatGPT right now or any LLM and say, hey, generate me a logo or a scene of a movie or whatever thought in my basic creative thinking, the output is going to be very limited. Your conversation with ChatGPT, I can promise you now, is going to be 1,000 times better. There's going to be lighting considerations, sound considerations, all these other elements and nuances that touch to feelings and human condition that I just don't see and get, right? I'm like, I just need a logo, right? You're going to think about all-encompassing things. So I would say, well, I say to creatives often, is that the tools have always been evolving. My wife's a creative director herself, and I remember when I started using Canva, she's like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. How dare you? Right? I see her sometimes playing with it, right? But I think is like all these tools are evolving. Before that, it was Photoshop. Before that, it was CAD and whatever else. And, you know, like all these tools evolved in the previous iterations. People were like, how dare you evolve this and lose the soul of what we do? And so I think that this is the latest tool. And your creativity is now more important now more than ever, I would say. So don't lose it.
Yeah. I'm going to come back to you in a moment. I want to answer Craig's question. How do we ensure that whoever is building these platforms have a kind of a neutral best interest versus an agenda? Can we, or what, I mean, you can, both of you guys can touch on this.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge concern. I think, you know, they have those, in the States, they have those congressional hearings that they ask the dumbest questions ever. I mean, I think I scream at those more than I do at sports matches, if I'm honest. With those questions being asked, and it's all about regulation. How the heck do you regulate these guys? You know, these smart, you know, Sam Altmans of the world and whatever else. I mean, that's the biggest concern. These are the guys making it. They're private entities. They're not being regulated. And they've got their own agenda that they're pushing. Something you were alluding to a little bit earlier. All of these, you know, capitalists going forth and conquering. I mean, that's the biggest concern. I think a very good part and a kind of a silver lining right now is that there are many different kinds and types. You've got Croc, you've got Google, you know, you got, they're all kind of, yes, trying to compete each other, but there isn't one, you know, monopoly.
I see.
Around one company. If you don't like the one, you can ship to the other. If you don't like that one, you'll ship to the other. There'll always be
different political parties.
Yeah, 100%. I do not. 100%. And listen, they're all out to get the other. So if the ones, you know, release the fact that it's, I mean, Elon Musk's been in the press about this a heck of a lot. It's got this and that, and it says this and it says that. So it's almost kind of developing its own little ecosystem that kind of protects. And maybe I'm being a little bit too optimistic. I'm an optimism at heart. But I think there's kind of that kind of protects us a little bit more. That, and we are also able to, you know, to some extent, control the system prompt. The back end, say, like you were alluding to earlier, only answer truthfully. Don't always, you know, reaffirm my beliefs. Do this and that. You know, if you understand how the technology works and you really go deep into how to properly utilize it, you're able to get very different results.
Good for the educator.
So that's the point, right? Around education and making sure that everybody is as upskilled as possible, yes?
All right. I want to answer that question very thoroughly because I can see here there's someone who can really capitalize on this answer. So what you're going to do is you're going to get his contact number and you're going to build his POCs for him, number one. Then number two, you're going to, and I think this is true for any type of work going into the future. You have to think about fundamentally why was graphic design created? It was there to communicate using visual art. So how are you going to do that now with the tools at your disposal, which might be AI? So now instead of just website logo, now you have to put it all together. Now it's about curating. Now it's about curating information. Now it's about going to the small businesses in the area that you're in or in spaces. What's wonderful, I mean, I built my business this way as well. You don't even need to work in South Africa, but be in South Africa. You could be providing services anywhere in the same time zone or alternative time zones. There is no need to only look at this specific space as your playground. Take the opportunity. If you know how to build that, that's not... Remember, other countries don't have as many young people as we do, with the fire and the imagination and the creativity. So look inside of you in terms of what is your inherent value. What can you bring to it? And think about where your value is and how you can communicate that to your customers. And then it's just a game of how do you brand yourself? How do you make connections? How do you sell yourself in a commercial space that actually shows that value?
Thanks, Kara. Okay, I'm going to take two more and then we're done. We're going to go network and we're going to talk and have a blast. And then you guys are going to go home. All right. So with the mic, who has the mic? Oh, you have the mic. Okay, send.
Kellen, earlier on in your opening statement, you mentioned that businesses in Africa have problems and are looking to AI for solutions. So my question to you is, what are those problems and how are you and your team looking at those problems and coming up with solutions?
All right. So this is what we're going to do. So we're going to take, so you'll answer that one. And then these two pass the mic quickly. And we're passing the mic because it's being recorded. Okay.
Earlier on, we touched on slightly about data centers potentially being in South Africa. We are currently a very unequal country and we already struggle with a lot of electricity and water problems. So how do we balance the growth of AI or bringing data centers into South Africa? Because if we look at our other data centers across the world, where they tend to be located, they'll put them in communities that probably already struggle with access to water and electricity. So how, as a country that's extremely unequal, do we balance that? Yeah. That.
Perfect. Commissioner, you'll take that one? Yeah. Okay. One last one.
Hello. So mine is not necessarily a question, but just a reassuring voice from the education space to say that as an educator, I'm currently sitting with students that are really well-versed when it comes to AI because we are ensuring that we are preparing them for the world out there that uses AI. And what we do personally at our school is that we are a Microsoft school, so we have that partnership with Microsoft Education. But also, it goes just beyond just being a Microsoft school and using a ThinkPad or using an iPad during your lessons. But we have shifted the way in which we do our lessons. For the grade nines, we have what we call 21 CLD, which is 21st Century Learning Design Project, where learners are encouraged to pick a project that they want to do in their grade 9 year. And within that project, there are 7 things that go in line with 21 CLD, things like knowledge construction. They have to construct their own knowledge. The use of ICT, 21st Century Learning problem solving, you know. So we're looking at those things to say, we have all these resources. Now, these are the problems that we're facing here on Earth. I currently have a project where the learners have designed their own skincare products. They've created a mock-up company where they have a skincare range, and I've had to teach them how to teach their AI agents, because we use Copilot because we're a Microsoft school, how to use their Copilot agents to basically help them in creating this business. So at grade 9 level, you're already sitting with people that know that we use AI. We're not trying to hide the fact that we do use AI from them so that they're not scared of it and so that they're not gullible when they get out there.
Awesome. Thank you so much. All right, let's answer it. Kim, thank you. You want to answer this question, then Mashamba, and then we're a wrap.
So like I said, we're using it for many SOEs in terms of identifying mismanagement
addressing mismanagement, and sometimes mismanagement also has to do with communication, right? Making sure that the right message gets to the right stakeholder at the right time. Fraud and risk detection, governance, compliance use cases, the amount of bureaucracy in this country from a business perspective as well as also in the a governance space is astronomical. I mean, I think Africa is one of the most bureaucratic spaces to do business. And I think that's where back office use cases are going to change the game for Africa because we have so much compliance issues. I think there's a crazy statistic that how long it takes to even just register a business in Africa.
Yeah.
I think also it'll bring light to what is actually happening in Africa. There's been a narrative for way too long. Other people, organizations, telling our stories, telling others what's is Africa and what how we work and do things. Now we have the opportunity to really identify what works for us. And so those use cases are normally driven to what is the authentic brand of the organizations that I work with. So what problem are you specifically trying to solve? And in that, like I said, it's a lot to do with the problems that we're dealing with on an everyday basis. Mismanagement, fraud and risk, back office issues. How do we do more with less?
Thank you. Cool. I think we've got a unique challenge of South Africa in particular of having to address both sides of the spectrum. We have to understand that in some environments we're third world and some environments were first world. We've got the 1% and then the 1% of the 1%. And I think that the challenge and opportunity is that we have to do both. We can't ignore where technology and economics and just what the conversations of last week are going, but we also can't like leave everyone else behind. So I think to practically answer your question, I met with a couple gentlemen actually 2 weeks ago, and they're looking into hydro opportunities of developing power sources outside the Western Cape in KZN. And then there's also the massive opportunity of taking the Northern Cape and all the high sun quality that we have there to develop. Our power and capacity problems are not due to lack. They're due to mismanagement. So if we actually have it, I mean, the Northern Cape has something like 95% sun capacity, where like Ireland has 5%. And they still have solar farms. So what can we do here? And I think those amazing opportunities to not tap into and put ourselves in a worse situation, but to do both. And I think that's our onus and that's our responsibility.
Guys, I think as we close this conversation, you guys will get a chance to chat with many people in the audience outside. But as we close, let's close with shifting our minds to gear ourselves for this moment. And all of you have insights about mindset shifting. Let's start with you, George. We'll go to you, Kaylin, and then you can close this out, Michelle.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, as I alluded to earlier, I think that's actually the most fundamental and important question to ask. Not, you know, how can I tweak my prompting or what course can I take? But how can I change my mindset to work with this new piece of technology? And what I would say, and it's what I've, you know, personally try to push at myself in my position, my career and all of that, is just to be outrageously curious. Mm-hmm. Because this technology aids that kind of thinking. You're able to lean on it for that kind of thinking, you know, be interested in this kind of stuff, have the mindsets of not, you know, being very scared, risk averse, et cetera, et cetera. Think of it as an opportunity, shifting your mindset from risk, worry, doubt, to one of opportunity and excitement.
Thank you, Joyce. Cal?
For me, it's really about the excitement of what if and making you sure that when you're asking those interesting, difficult questions, also grounding yourself. So funny enough, as much as I've worked with AI, it's also the more I've needed to ground myself in my reality and see, okay, where are the immediate opportunities? So grounding with an intense sense of adventure and curiosity to imagine a world where all the rules are broken.
Wow. Thank you so much, Ashant.
I think two things are standing out for me through this conversation. Firstly, the technology that we see today is its worst and slowest version that it's ever going to be. It's only going to get better. It's only going to get faster. It's only going to get crazier every like 3 months. So that's one reality. The other thing is that the disruption is not going to slow down. It's only speeding up. So if you think, okay, next year it's going to be a little bit lighter and we're not going to have so much change, you're also wrong. It's only also going to speed up. So the requirement is that we learn how to adapt and evolve faster than ever.
Yeah.
And build a mindset and a resilience to constantly evolve and constantly improve and change. It's non-negotiable now more than ever. And it's irrespective of the tech. It's irrespective of the business environment. It's irrespective of the rand versus the dollar. It's just where we are now. So I think we have to learn adaptability now more than ever and go buy my book.
Both of your books are available. Both of your books are available. George, Khaled, Mashami, let's give them a big round of applause. Thank you guys, Baron MT. Thank you.